Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Bretall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 172 for comics originally released on November 24th, 2010. Now, we're recording this on our usual time, a Saturday morning, but I don't know about you, Bob, I did not get my books until Wednesday.
I didn't get mine until Thursday, 2 days late because of Thanksgiving.
Well, again, I had 2 days late. I usually get on Monday and stuff, and so I've only read the books we're talking about tonight. I've got a stack of 49 others, I think, for a total of 52 comics this week, so a lot of stuff, and having, you know, 2 days less to read it, not a big fan of that.
I actually read several of them. I had my power out on Thursday, so I read like six of them, other than the three.
If I'd gotten them on the normal time on Monday, I probably would have had time to read all of them, because I had time early in the week, but didn't happen. Oh well. So, starting us off in DC is Teen Titans number 89. I'm a long-time Teen Titans fan. I mean, that was one of kind of my gateway drugs into comics, was New Teen Titans and stuff. And aside from kind of the pre-New Teen Titans appearances of Beast Boys, Changeling, whatever you want to call them, and kind of the pre-1980s Dick Grayson appearances, who's in here as Batman, I've probably read nearly every comic these characters have been in, and I'm willing to bet you have too, maybe.
Yeah. For most part. I mean, I have drifted in and out, but I've gone back and filled in the issues, you know, when I've drifted off the series.
Well, I mean, I'm even talking about, you know, Rose's appearances over in Deathstroke and all the stuff. I mean, since I pretty much cover the entire DC universe, I'm really familiar with these characters. And, I mean, the concept for this issue is the Titans meet the new Robin. We've seen this for pretty much every Robin, well, not pretty much, we have seen this for every Robin after the original. We saw it with Jason Todd, obviously with Tim Drake, who was a longtime member and leader of the team. We saw it briefly with Stephanie, now we're getting it with Damian. So it's not a new concept, but it's a good one, so I'm okay with it. And really, I think Damian, this particular Robin, adds a really fun dynamic to the team that we get to see here.
And maybe they'll actually do what Dick wants them to do, which is help him develop his character a little bit, because, you know, being which is one of his defining character traits, is good for a while, but it's already getting kind of old, you know.
Yeah, and he's very much a know-it-all, and he's young. I mean, he's what, 8 or something?
Yeah,
so coming in acting like he owns the place, which is part of the fun dynamic, you know. And they did some good stuff with that. We had some good character moments here. We had some good action moments. Overall, though, you know, while I liked this issue, I had a couple of problems with it. And ironically enough, I think they all come around the concept of quote-unquote soul. First, I'm going to start with a nitpick. If you go a page before the staple, we see Raven getting them to the scene of the action. Now, her soul self and her teleportation stuff has never looked like this before that I recall. And that kind of an art inconsistency always kind of annoys me. It's not a big deal. It is a nitpick. But it's like, between that and having Beast Boy have the little tooth thing like he had in the cartoon, are the people doing the comic, in this case on the art side, more familiar with the Titans because of the cartoon or because of the comics? And since we're reading comics, I would hope it'd be for the comics, but I don't know. You know, and those are the types of things that just kind of poke at me, and it's like, you know, annoy me. Again, not a big deal, doesn't really impact the quality of the story at all. But there was kind of an aspect of the thing where it felt like there was a going through the motions to the issue, and it wasn't a bad story, but it wasn't great, and it just, I had a problem connecting with it. And these are characters I'm familiar with and I like. And I'm not sure kind of what the crux of the problem is there. Now, the threat here Barney, and I actually had to go dig around for his name, because it's mentioned like twice or whatever, but he's a nearly nameless threat with no discernible motive to speak of whatsoever. It's like, okay, he's going there, he's causing havoc, but why? And then we get this one scene a couple of pages before the staple in this desert with some archaeologists or whatever, and I'm like, who are these people? How does this connect to the story? And most importantly, why should I care? As it was, this was a one-page non-sequitur. It was a good page. It introduced some characters that I assume are going to be important down the line. But as far as this issue went, it didn't add anything. So I read the issue. I enjoyed the issue. It had some good stuff. But I've got to feel that it was hitting right on target, but that target was just a couple of feet to my left or something, you know? And I'm not sure why it didn't connect with me as much as it could have, and I think should have, given the quality of the art and the story.
So everything you say is fair, because, you know, I agree with all those. But for me, I'm just coming off of an era where I had actually dropped the Teen Titans because I was not enjoying it. And I've come back to it probably just a couple issues ago and caught up on it. And I actually liked this story a lot more than I've liked a couple of the previous streaks on this title. So for me, some of the stuff, you know, I assume, like on the Beast Boy thing, whether it's unintentional or intentional, I think they're doing it purposely as a callback to the Titans cartoon, maybe because they're hoping to have more people who are familiar with the cartoon picking up the comic or whatnot. I didn't bother me that much. It's something that I noticed. The little tooth thing is kind of goofy, but, you know, well. The one-page cut to the archaeology site, you know, fair enough. It's just, okay, where did that come from? I assume it's going to get developed later on. But I liked the Damian interaction with the team in general. I liked the scene with Dick and, you know, the fight, him going off half-cocked. He kind of, like, you know, does his stuff. And he's going to add a good dynamic to the book, I think. So,
well, and with him going off half-cocked and stuff, it was very in character for how we've read Damian over in the Batman books. They nailed the characterization, both for him, I think a little less so with the Dick Grayson Batman and stuff, but they do have the voice of the characters right, the style of the characters. And you're right, I think this is better than the title has been for a while, because it's had, the whole Titans franchise has had a rough couple of years, I think.
When they show him in the mansion, kind of like right before, you know, there's a couple of scenes where he's standing next to Cassie. It's like, man, he is short. You know, he's like, she's a teenage girl and he's like coming up to her chest, you know, just about. So, I mean, a lot of times that doesn't really come off that he's so young and he's so small, but they're really drawing him like an 8-year-old, 9-year-old, because he is not tall at all. And he really kind of stands out like that. So
I'm hoping to see some stuff between Damian and, you know, the Kid Flash here. Because Bart, you know, back when he was Impulse, was so much the do first, think later that Damian is right now. And there could be some fun growth potential for both characters there.
So, I mean, I gave it a 4. And a lot of that was due to the fact that I enjoyed the issue, and it's kind of a welcome back to the title, because I had actually dropped the title recently, and I came back to it because Damian was joining the team, and it has the new writer and, you know, all that. So
for me, I gave it a 3, and I'll fairly admit I may be a little harsh on this, but, I mean, I've got high expectations for Titans. While this was good, there are a couple of things that as a single issue didn't work that no doubt will get resolved in the full course of this storyline, particularly that non sequitur scene, what's the motivation for the villain, all that kind of stuff. I have a feeling I'll enjoy the overall story more than any particular individual issue of it. And I still recommend the book. I think, you know, again, I'm a big fan of the Titans. I think they've got a good creative team on the book. It's good art. It's good story. I just wish they would work a little bit more on the accessibility of, you know, a particular issue and kind of the completeness of the issue.
What I'll say is anyone who has dropped the title within the last year or two, kind of like I did, it's maybe a time, if you have previously liked the Titans, to come back and give it a look again, because it worked for me.
Cool.
Next, we've got Captain America, number 612. We're in part two of the trial of Captain America. What we have had happen is it has been leaked to the press that Bucky slash Captain America was, you know, he is Captain America, and he was the Winter Soldier, and he was a Russian agent who did assassinations and all this kind of stuff. So that's, you know, anyone can imagine, you know, the way that the press in the real world gets a hold of, like, even insignificant, stupid things and, you know, blows them out of proportion if they got a hold of something that actually has some meat behind it, you know. So in the end of the last issue, Bucky turns himself in, and now he's in jail, and he's on trial. We see from old Captain America, Bernie Rosenthal is a lawyer, and she's back, and she's going to be Bucky's defense attorney. There was not a tremendous amount of action in this issue, but I really liked the story development that happened in it.
I would agree. There's not a whole lot of action here. This was very much a middle chapter of a story, but it reset the scene very well. It moved the story along a bit, and it provided, I thought, enough context to get people kind of up to speed and connected with the story, not just aware of it, but, you know, feel for these characters. You know, I really liked the callback bringing in Bernie as Bucky's lawyer, because she was a supporting cast member back in, what, the late 70s, early 80s? So she was kind of there when I was starting to read some of Cap, because I've been reading it off the rack since around, I don't know, 300, 306, somewhere in there. So, like, half this series I've been following off the rack. So I like when they kind of reach back and dust off some characters and say, hey, let's bring them to the forefront, use them for a little bit just to acknowledge they existed or whatever. And since, you know, the go-to lawyer choice in New York for Marvel heroes, Matt Murdock, is kind of unavailable because of that whole Shadowland thing, this was a cool character to bring in. And I think that, you know, overall, this was a really good issue. You know, would it have helped to read the previous one? Yeah, but this is one where I think you could start the story with this issue and be comfortable with it. You know, again, not a lot of action. We get some, but frankly, this title for a while has been more of the intrigue than the action. And I'm good with that, because it's done well.
I like the character Sin, you know, Red Skull's daughter, her kind of development here. I don't know if it's much of a spoiler. It's a minor spoiler. I mean, just, you know, she's kind of taken over the mantle of the Red Skull from her father, you know, so it's, that's an interesting development. And, you know, Master Man, you know, it's like, it's always good to have Captain America going back against the Nazis. And you got the supporting cast. They've been using Falcon and Black Widow a lot as the supporting cast in the series, and they've been using them really well, I think.
Well, go to the two pages right before the staple. And we've got this scene where they're kind of, you know, getting into the story. And it just, the layout of the panels is cool. There's not much dialogue, but, you know, it's a good entry into the issue for these two characters. You know, it was effectively done. And, I mean, we've had talks on the previous teleconference that really, the character that ought to be the backup feature is the Falcon. I mean, they've got a great opportunity here that they've been totally squandering to really give that character his own spotlight in the backup feature, build up an audience for him, because he's a cool character. And I just feel like the time is right for him to get a little bit more, you know, exposure with the audience and stuff. There just seems like there's so much they could do with him.
Now, since you brought up the topic of the backup, you know, let's talk about the backup, the Nomad backup. Most of these Nomad backup stories, well, this is there was one, like, kind of in-between one, but the first one involved her getting, you know, knocked out and tied up to a chair in a basement, and now she goes into some place, she gets knocked up and is tied up to a chair, you know? It's like, is there nothing else this character does than get knocked out and tied up to a chair? It was an interesting thing, and Sean McKeever's writing it, he's also writing the Onslaught miniseries that's coming that has this Bucky character as a key player in it. So I'm guessing that this is going to flow into that. I'm not particularly interested in the Onslaught. I've never read any of the Onslaught stuff. So
you shouldn't.
I've heard enough feedback like that that not been compelled to read any of it. So I'm not even going to get the Onslaught miniseries.
It's entrenched in the X corner of the universe that really does not work for you. That it just seems like it would just be a really, I don't want to even say an uphill battle for the thing to win you over. It seems like an impossibility. All the things you don't like about comics, it pretty much has as key selling points, you know?
Did it have some touch point to the Rob Liefeld-iverse?
Yeah.
They did?
That's what kicked off that whole Heroes Reborn stuff.
Yeah, and I pretty much skipped that whole take on... I picked those up out of 50-cent bins long after that happened, and I skimmed through them. I didn't even read them. They were so bad.
But I think that may also be part of why this Nomad backup's not really clicking with you, is that character is out of that whole universe. And they're trying to do kind of the fish out of water kind of a thing here with the Girl Without a World stuff, but not really playing on that aspect, which is good because I don't think they should. Now, from my standpoint, as somebody who read all that stuff, is familiar with the Nomad character, again, read all the appearances, whatever, of this one, I thought this particular backup installment was better than usual. It had a darker tone, and it actually, I think, while it's a middle chapter of a story, it's one that could work as just a standalone installment if you're willing to take it as given, and they explain it in this, of how she got into this position, and if you're willing to accept the final couple of panels there as kind of the closure of the story, which I think works there. Obviously, there's more to tell on both sides of this, but it was a surprisingly effective single installment that can be taken on its own and work successfully. Now, again, I don't think that what they're doing with this character is particularly, you know, innovative or exciting or fits with the lead story particularly well. I really did not care for the art style here. It was good, effective art. I just didn't like the style. And I think if they had had a Brubaker-written Falcon with an art style that complemented the main feature, people would be raving about the backup, and that would help the book, the whole thing. As it is, this backup would have fit better either over in Young Allies, given the Black Widow connection, potentially over in her book before it got axed, same with Young Allies for that matter. It just seems like they're trying to build an audience for this character here, and it's not the right audience to be trying to build it from.
Yeah, I was looking at it, and you know, the art was not that appealing to me either. It's just nothing wrong with it. It's just not an art style that clicked with me. I'm going to guess that once Onslaught starts, they're going to either, and we look at the previous catalog for the issue of Captain America that's coming out around when Onslaught starts. I mean, are they going to either drop the backup or else put somebody else in the backup? I mean, it doesn't seem like they'd continue having this backup once Onslaught's going on.
It doesn't say what's going to be in 615 for Cap. As a backup feature, if any. It says it's 32 pages, Trial of Cap finale.
Okay, so that's it. You know, so it has been 40 pages, right? So they're just taking the backup out of it, leaving it at $3.99, and, you know, rolling with that.
I hate to say it, but that's kind of par for the course for Marvel. They will use some excuse, be it a backup feature or an anniversary issue, jump the price up to where it seems like you get value for the money at the price hike, and then that value just kind of goes away, but the price hike stays. And, you know, again, putting the backup feature in there was a nice touch, but it seemed like they had to get shamed into that for a while. And we're at a point where DC is rolling back to $2.99 on all 32-page books. We're seeing even books over at Image rolling back in price, or rolling down in price, not back necessarily. Yet Marvel seems content to stick with the 32 pages at $3.99, and that's just a bad move.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it's like you made the statement of, you know, being shamed into doing things. I think it's pretty clear that Marvel has no shame at this point. So that seems to not be the effective way to get them to do anything.
But it's what they're trying, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, oh no, I agree.
But that's why it doesn't work. So for me, I give both the front story here and the backup story each a rating of 4 and an overall rating of 4. I thought this was a good issue. And even though it was the middle part of both stories, I was pleased with kind of the entry, the accessibility, that kind of stuff.
I gave the issue a 4, and, you know, it's even though I didn't care for the backup that much, it wasn't enough to pull the thing down. And I have liked Nomad stories before. It's not that I don't connect with the character. I mean, there have been when she's interacting with Spider-Girl, and there have been stories. I guess when you have a female character that you kind of want to set up as a, in my opinion, you should be trying to set up as a nice role model kind of character and something that a girl can read the book and be happy. It's not a good idea, in my opinion, to continually have that character, you know, getting knocked out and tied up to chairs. You know, it's just like, come on. That just bugs me. It's just like when we reviewed the first issue of Black Widow, where, you know, what happens is, like, she's, like, right out of the gate, her new book, she's, like, knocked out, captured, all this stuff done, and it's just, like, doesn't do a good job of setting up that it's a strong character. Anyway.
That's fair.
Moving on to our last book, which is Stan Lee's The Traveler, with Mark Waid writing it from Boom Studios. Now, this book, I loved this book.
This was the Stan Lee one I was most curious about, just because I like a good time twist story. And frankly, the whole concept of something, a collaboration between Stan Lee and Mark Waid, just sounded really intriguing right off the bat.
Right. And, you know, when we read the Soldier Zero, you know, there were some pacing issues maybe that I had with that one. I didn't hear any of that. However, if you think back to when I interviewed Mark Waid about this one, and he's talking about how Stan Lee really schooled him on stuff, and he, like, learned stuff from Stan, you know, it's just whatever he learned from Stan worked, because I thought the pacing was great in this book. I mean, I've always liked Mark's writing style, but, I mean, this one had almost, like, the perfect combination to me of exposition to kind of set up what was going on, action, you know, just story flow, and, you know, leaving you on a nice note that, you know, it's like, oh, how's that going to get resolved, that makes you want to come back for the next installment. It was just a great comic book.
Yeah, I would agree with that entirely, because, you know, there was a lot of action, and it was used to effectively set up the characters and the premise. It ended on a nice, strong beat that I've got some basic theories about. I don't know if I want to give it out of fear of a spoiler or not, but there are things here that it's got a lot of, gee, I can speculate about this potential. You know, who is Kronos? What's going on? What's the importance of the scene there at the end? And all of that. And, you know, it did have kind of that perfect blend of the high concept stuff from Stan, the smooth execution and stuff from Mark Waid, and really, I think if either of them had tried to write this book on their own, neither of those versions would have been as good as this. It was a really good collaboration as far as the output, and I think a lot of that goes to, you know, the really kind of, I'm going to say, and this may be a little ironic on the Stan Lee side, the lack of ego on both parts. Because
mm-hmm.
I think Waid was willing to listen to what Stan said, the notes he had, and no, do it this way, whatever. And he may have said, well, what about this? And Stan would have said no, or whatever, and vice versa. But because Stan, I don't think, is known for you know, lack of ego or whatever. He's got a very self-assured humbleness. How about that? But his stuff frequently feels a little dated and whatnot, and this didn't have that at all. So it was, I think, a really, again, smooth execution. I loved some of the stuff they were doing, both with the time manipulation, the fundamental forces of nature and stuff. And it really, there are a lot of questions raised. There's enough, not so much answers, but hints and things like that to tantalize me and keep me interested. I mean, I've got a big theory on what's going on with this Julie FBI agent and stuff at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, whatever, but I'm really curious. So to me, this was a strong, strong launch and arguably the one they should have started with first.
Yeah, this to me was an absolute 5 out of 5. I would highly recommend this book to anybody. You know, it's just, I thought it was great. One of the best number ones I've read in a long time.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. And I'm looking forward to this having a long and successful run and a steady stream of answers to questions we have and new questions getting raised to where there's a progression of information release.
Yeah, I'm just loving it, like, you know, when Mark's, you know, doing the Irredeemable and the Incorruptible, you know, hitting those out of the park. I'm loving both those series. I'm loving this one. You know, it's just hope it runs a long time and we get more of the story. The art by Chad Harden, I think, really complimented it. Does a really nice job of story flow. I'm not that familiar with his art in other things. I'm sure I've seen it before. I don't think it's the first thing he's done, but it hasn't, like, you know, stood out in my mind. But I thought he did a really great job here.
I also think the colorist needs to get some credit. There are a couple effects that were done really effectively in a few places that I think were more at the coloring level than the art level. I'm thinking specifically top panel of the last page and a few other places like that. So, I mean, just it was a well-put-together book all the way around.
I like the fact that, well, you know, just on the coloring side, I want to be careful how I say this. It had, like, regular comic book coloring. You know what I mean? Things are colored. There's so many of these books that come out now that have this muted color palette, or that they have, like, all variations of the same color, you know, kind of thing, that
it used the full color spectrum.
Sometimes work. Yeah, sometimes those work and sometimes they don't. This is using the full color palette, and it's more, you know, I like the way that it was done. It was very good. So beyond these books, I picked up and read the next issue of Amazing Spider-Man, second issue in Big Time. Excellent, excellent read. Just as good as the first issue of Big Time. Anyone who has not been reading Spider-Man, I would highly recommend giving it a look again, starting with issue 648, the new Big Time run. Very good. I read Batwoman number 0. I thought it was nice. I think it was more of a precursor to Batwoman 1, you know, as it should be at the 0 issue. So you didn't have the story momentum going, but it was a nice issue. Read FF number 585. Excellent, excellent issue. Nice cliffhanger at the end. You know, I've been kind of universally loving Hickman's work on the FF, so, you know, that went good. First out of the box was The Walking Dead number 79. Anytime I get a box and it has a Walking Dead comic in it, that's the first thing I read. This issue was one of the best ones that I've read in a while. You know, you've seen this stuff coming, and Kirkman's been building the suspense, and I was kind of on the edge of my seat anticipating on almost a page-by-page basis as I was reading this issue, waiting for the other shoe to drop on stuff. It's like I'm trying to forcing myself to not have my eyes kind of like read forward when I flip the page to the end of the panel on the next page over. It was just very suspenseful, I thought. Excellent and well done thing. And then I read the 2 Ultimate comics that came out this week, the Ultimate Avengers 3. A good issue with the Blade and the Vampires storyline. And then Spider-Man 150, which Spider-Man 150 was a great value if you never read the Spider-Man Super Special that came out a few years back. Ultimate Spider-Man Super Special number 1. It was a one-shot, and it's reprinted here in this issue. It was a great issue, and if you've never read it, it's probably kind of hard to find, and that makes this thing really a great value. If you have read it, then a little less so if you're paying $5.99 for this book and you're getting something that you've already read. But the main story I thought was a really good story. It's nice setup into what's coming next, but then when you look at the previews and it's death of Spider-Man and it's death of this ultimate Spider-Man, it's like, well, you know, it's good, and then they're going to kill him in 2 months. So, or are they going to kill him? Is it going to be a fake death? It's like, I'm so inured to death in comics, you know, they're going to kill someone in the FF. And it's like, you know, I don't even care anymore. They're going to kill someone and they're going to be back in 2 years or something. So,
well, I think with the FF, they're going to be back in a year.
Yeah.
Because that'd be about the time Fantastic Four 600 would be due. And what better time to bring back and reunite the Fantastic Four than then?
Yeah, but using my point, I mean, they have such a revolving door on death that, you know, I don't even, it doesn't excite me or bother me or anything anymore. It's like, oh, I think it's stupid to kill this person. It's like, oh, well, they're going to kill him and they'll bring him back anyway, so who cares?
Well, every time I talk on the Mayo Report about them cheapening, you know, any sales technique, this is exactly what I'm talking about. They've gone to that well too many times and in many cases too ineffectively. That it's like, okay, you know, I'm wise to that game. You know, they've done it with death, they've done it with the miracle resurrection or whatever, they've done it with the number ones. And that's not to say these things don't work, but they're burning off goodwill even when they do work. I mean, Hickman could have a brilliant storyline planned for killing off a Fantastic Four member, actually have it, I don't want to say, you know, make sense, pay off in the long run, but you know what I mean. It could be a great ride. But because we've been burned or whatever so many times by this in the past, you know, in just a year or two back, didn't they do a, we're going to go kill off one of the members and stuff, do a one-shot on it and stuff. So, I mean, they've gone back to this well with this title recently, that it cheapens the whole thing.
Right.
And that just that sense of cheapening is dangerous for them.
But by and large, you know, I kind of picked some of my favorites off the top, and I was not disappointed with any of them. It's kind of funny, you know, I've kind of railed against the ultimate stuff. I do like the ultimate stuff, you know. It's just I don't like the pricing on the ultimate stuff. And, you know, ultimately, it's just something that I'm going to find myself walking away from the entire ultimate universe because of the pricing. Although that doesn't mean I won't, at some point in the future, pick the books up out of a back issue bin somewhere, especially if they're under cover price. So anyway, that's all I had.
I read nothing else. Like I said earlier, I got another 49 comics that came this week to read through at some point. I got a couple of, I think a hardcover or two also in here, but you know, I just, again, need to find the time to do the reading. These things came late. I had a busy couple of days the last few days, so having a time. That do it then?
Does it for me.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Secret Six number 28 from DC, Heroes for Hire number 1 from Marvel, and Marine Man number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.